A historic moment as former U.S. President Donald Trump turns himself in to face arraignment before a New York State court in the first ever indictment filed against a current or former U.S. leader. Also,
there is a room and scope in Ethiopia in terms of reconciliation, in terms of truth dialogue, that all of this can happen.
The European Union Special Representative for the Horn of Africa talks about the road ahead for Ethiopia and the Tigray region. We'll have in-depth reporting and analysis. Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Hello, I'm Vincent McCorry in for Haiti Adams, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty Tuesday in a New York State court to a 34-count indictment accusing him of falsifying business records in furtherance of an unspecified crime. Prosecutors described it as a bid to hide a harsh money payment to a porn actress to help him win the presidency in 2016. In the first ever criminal case against a current or former U.S. leader, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg alleged in a statement of facts accompanying the indictment that Trump repeatedly and fraudulently falsified New York business records to conceal criminal conduct that hid damaging information from the voting bloc voting public during the 2016 presidential election. Well, we go now to New York City, and Jonathan Murithi from the Swahili service of the Voice of America joins me from the courthouse. Jonathan, welcome. And first up, I want to ask you, you know, there was a heightened kind of sense of alert there in anticipation of the indictment and the arrival of former President Trump in New York. How do you describe the situation soon after that and on to today?
Thank you, Vincent. Indeed, right behind where I am standing was, of course, a beehive of activities here. The moment was awaited for. The anticipation had been building up until yesterday. And probably I should just mention that we were not allowed to get inside with our cameras because we had applied for that. But the judge did not let us get in with the video cameras. Only a few journalists were inside with still to be able to take a still photograph. Mm-hmm. And so outside here were very many of his supporters, as well as people who were against him in many ways, saying mm-hmm. that it was indeed the right thing that was done in this courthouse.
Now, to some, it looked like such a brief moment. The former president was in court for just a few minutes or for just a short time, and then it was all over. Can you describe to our viewers what yesterday was all about?
Indeed, Vincent, so when he walked through the door here, he waved at the crowd that was waiting outside here. And when he got in there, those that were observing from inside say that he was just looking around, looking a bit lost, so to speak, as he scanned to see who was in the courtroom. And then he sat next to his lawyers. And that is when later in the afternoon, that is when, as you know, the 34 felony charges were read to him. So generally, that was the situation in the courtroom. There was not a whole lot. He only uttered a few words, like saying that he was not guilty, or he was denying the charges, so to speak.
Yeah. Now, people have been talking about this. There's been a lot of media coverage. What are you hearing in New York from New Yorkers themselves? What is the media reporting about the case up to this point?
Well, probably we should start with all the major newspapers and not even just here in New York, but around the United States. So the headlines are, of course, the president charged in court, a former president charged with felony charges in court here in Lower Manhattan. And on social media, there has been a lot of chatter since yesterday, people having different opinions over what happened here in this courtroom yesterday. Of course, this depends, Vincent, on who is writing on social media, because as you know, the former president has quite a following, and he, in equal measure, has many people who do not believe in what he stands for. Mm-hmm. And therefore, many people that are speaking or writing on social media do say that there was a political angle to this case going towards 2024, when he is expected to be one of the candidates in the election.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan, for your excellent reporting. That is Jonathan Murithi of VOA's Swahili Service. Now, here on the Washington, D.C., the U.S. Capitol, we have VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. Catherine, well, at the Capitol, we know that for quite a while now, the talk has been that this is a political case from the Republican side. The Democrats have said the law should take its course and that Mr. Former President Trump wouldn't get a fair trial. First, why do those who support former President Trump say it is a political witch hunt and that this is not a legal issue, but it's a political issue?
That's so right. That's a discussion that I've heard up here on Capitol Hill time and again. You know, we had two impeachments of President Trump while he was in the presidency, and now we're hearing the same discussion, and that's that Democrats and democratically motivated prosecutors and judges want to go after former President Trump because he's once again running for the presidency in 2024, and they are arguing that because this case is going to be going on well into next year, right when the presidential primary season is getting started, that this is going to impact voters' viewpoints of the former president. They are arguing that these charges were really boosted, that they, if anything, in any other case would be misdemeanors, and that now the prosecutor in New York is making them into felonies to make the case against Trump even more difficult. So that's what we were hearing from congressional Republicans yesterday as the former president was in that New York court.
So for the sake of our viewers, it's not so much about the charges, but the timing, is it?
Yeah, that's a lot of what the Republicans up here on Capitol Hill were saying yesterday. You know, the case, the court case, is going to get started in January of next year. We have our very first caucuses and primaries in late January, early February. So they think that the timing is very suspicious, and they think that the fact that these are felonies shows that the New York prosecutor really wanted to go after former President Trump.
Now, some people, of course, have opined that there are kind of two systems here, that is the one that is holding the president or to say the Republican side accountable, and the one that handles issues that deal with the Democrats. Does this kind of a situation create doubt in the minds of people about the legal system, about the Department of Justice?
That's a great question. You know, the Department of Justice is not the one pursuing this particular investigation. The New York District Attorney is, the New York prosecutor. He is known for going after so-called white-collar crimes, which are business crimes, falsifying business records. And that's what he's arguing former President Trump did here, along with his lawyer, Michael Cohen. And that he's known for going after these cases. Democrats are saying, look, this is standard for him to go after these issues that New York cannot have people falsifying their business records. That's just simply a matter of the law, and that the law should be followed.
Well, Catherine, thank you very much for your reporting. We'd really appreciate that. Now, for some insight to what all of this means, let's go to David Monda. He's a professor at the City University of New York. Welcome to Africa 50, to Straight Talk Africa. We have many shows here. And first, I just want to come to you with this question. You know, for most of our viewing area, there's so many people, many political leaders, many presidents, current and former, who have been accused of stealing literally from their countries, and they've never seen a day in court. Now, people would want to know, why is this a crime that would cause this kind of attention, which will take a former president to court? Can you describe to our viewers?
So, thank you for having me. The fundamental legal issue here is equality before the law. the idea that Donald Trump, in spite of being a former president, is now not the president. So remember, he doesn't have the immunity of the office of the presidency, but he's a regular citizen. So in the event, whether you're the president or whether you are a regular citizen, when you commit high crimes and misdemeanors, when you commit felonies, when you commit civil crimes, that everybody should be equal under the law. So this is very important in terms of how we look at the prosecutorial arm of the legal justice system. But also for our viewers, it's also important to remember that in spite of Donald Trump being indicted, every individual is innocent until proven guilty, which is why you saw him fly from Florida to New York to face the charges. So he gets a chance, his attorneys get a chance to look at the evidence and to defend him against the charges from the prosecution. So it's those two angles, equality before the law, but also those who are accused are innocent until proven guilty, and they get a day in court, which is what happened with Trump yesterday.
And, you know, there's that part that he has been very critical of the prosecutor, of the judge himself, but he actually showed up. He handed himself in to be presented before a court of law. What can that tell us about the U.S. judicial system and how people hold these institutions?
I think it's important because Donald Trump could not ignore this indictment, because what would happen then is a warrant would be issued for his arrest, just like would happen with anybody else who ignored an indictment, and that would not be good. So he had to submit himself before the court. But I might also add that district attorney in New York and from state prosecutors are election officials. So he, in his campaign as a Democrat, Alvin Bragg promised to go after white-collar crimes in addition to this Donald Trump case. Federal prosecutors are somewhat different because they are appointed. So it's also important to understand that in the context of Alvin Bragg, which is why, to your earlier question, some of Trump's supporters will say this is a politically motivated case, because it appears that a Democrat who's now the district attorney in New York is going after Trump. But ultimately, Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, will argue that this is not about politics. It's fundamentally about evidence and the facts of the case that Donald Trump has to answer in New York City.
In terms of Trump himself has said, and others, they kind of have created the impression that the justice system in this country, or the rule of law, is dead. And of course, the Democrats on the other side don't agree with that kind of a position. How is this to be understood by those who are listening from elsewhere in terms of the rule of law in this country and the justice system?
I think it really needs to be understood in two contexts. So there's the politics of the case, but then there's the legal aspects of the case. So if you look at the legal aspects of the case, you really find that there's due process in terms of Trump's Fifth Amendment rights being respected and the hand of the law going forward as it should. However, there's the political angle, which is what you're alluding to, where Democrats will generally side with prosecuting Trump and Republicans will come to his defense. On the Republican side, it will be very interesting to see come May or September and January of next year whether Republicans will still be siding with Donald Trump politically, because, we all have to respect the rule of law and the process of the legal process, whether they will decide, because of all of Trump's cases, that it's not politically expedient to remain with Donald Trump. I think that will be the crux of the issue in terms of the political angle. But the legal angle, the president, former president, presenting himself as going forward, the politics is a separate issue, but related to this legal issue that's going on.
Some of, those who would look at the history of the former president and say, well, what has happened now can be looked at from that perspective of his history, that he has had a brush with the law for maybe decades. Is that something that actually can help some to understand what's going on?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Trump he's been a celebrity in his former life. He's been a reality TV show host. So his name brand is, very well known, not only in New York, but across the country and across the world. But even having said that, let's not forget, as you had said earlier in your earlier report, Trump has been impeached twice. It's just he's not been removed from office. But also historically, we've had presidents who've been in office who've been impeached, whether you think Andrew Johnson, whether you think Richard Nixon, whether you think Bill Clinton, and now even Donald Trump. So even historically, when you look at the United States in terms of a historical purview, this issue of submission to the law, irrespective of how high your office is a very fundamental and important tenet of U.S. jurisprudence. And I think this is something very important that people looking from other countries into the U.S. system can really appreciate, because this is not something that would happen in many other countries where a former president is brought before a court of law and actually has to face charges for what they have done in office.
Well, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much, David, for your insight.
Thank you, Bobby.
After the break, Haiti Adams talks to Annette Weber, the European Union Special Representative for the Horn of Africa. They discuss the road ahead for Ethiopia. Stay with us. Well, Annette Weber is the European Union Special Representative to the Horn of Africa. Haiti Adams talked to her about what the road ahead looks for Ethiopia and how can the people heal from the wounds of war.
Madam Special Representative, you recently visited Ethiopia. What were your discussions there?
For the last 2 years, the EU was engaged with the Ethiopian government basically on three baskets, as we call it. One was cessation of hostilities, ceasefire to end the war, access to, you know, to have humanitarian access to Tigray and to northern Ethiopia. And the third one is accountability. We've made it very clear that we hugely appreciate the pace with which the ceasefire has been signed, but also implemented. I think this is incredible that there has not been a single shot fired since the signatory. So I think this and humanitarian access, I think they're moving quite fast. What we were discussing since January, basically, is the question of accountability. What kind of accountability system are the Ethiopians looking at, both sides, both parties to the war? And of course, to us, it's really about the victims. It needs to be a victim-based justice system, transitional justice system. So for the last couple of months, we are discussing, of course, with the Minister of Justice, whom we met, and with the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, but of course also with the UN OHCHR, with the UN Human Rights Council, because we feel very strongly that an independent body needs to play a role in, you know, establishing basically the justice basis, the evidence basis, and the monitoring, the humanitarian and human rights monitoring on the ground.
The Biden administration has determined that war crimes have been committed in northern Ethiopia, and they believe that it's been committed by all sides in this conflict, and not just in the Tigray region, but also in neighboring regions. What is your assessment of the Biden administration's determination here?
I think what is necessary right now is to see how we can take these next steps with the Ethiopians, where the Ethiopians made it very clear, both sides, that they agree on a transitional justice system in conjunction with the African Union. So we would need this now to be implemented. The Ethiopians have started consultations with the population, with the society, but I think it also takes that next steps with the OHCHR to have these international components. So, you know, reflecting on what the findings are, what the findings will be, that there is a justice system that can really also deliver and show the victims and show the families of the victims, you know, that it's not just the end of the shooting, it's not just the end of the war, but that justice is taken serious.
Speaking of taking justice serious, can transitional justice really
be achieved in Ethiopia? We talked about seriousness here. Are both sides equally serious, not just about the peace deal and not just about the cessation of hostilities, but also seeing real justice for the victims?
I think this is where the question of accountability comes in right now. And I think accountability can really only come for your own population, for your own society. And I think what we've seen after this very cruel conflict, this very cruel war, is more and more people calling their authorities to be accountable for justice. So I'm quite hopeful that transitional justice, that justice can be done, and that there is a room and scope in Ethiopia for this necessary, you know, the justice part, but the transitional justice part in terms of reconciliation, in terms of truth dialogue, that all of this can happen. And this is in the making, but I think, you know, the implementation now comes.
Well, I'm sure a big part of your visit is also about the very relationship between Brussels and Addis as well. What is the nature of that relationship now?
I would say we always kept relations, but of course for us, you know, we stopped budget support with the beginning of the war. What is becoming very clear, and this is, you know, where the EU and EU member states have a huge interest, as you know, in terms of trade relations, Germany, the EU, other member states are basically number two and three of trade relations with Ethiopia. So this is the investment, the interest in keeping and re-engaging with Ethiopia. We need Ethiopia to play a regional role. I think this region is quite important to us as Europeans. You know, the Red Sea and is basically our trade route, is important for our LNG, energy diversification. So the aim is really to re-engage, to have this strategic relationship back again. And I think this is where we hope that the Ethiopians can take those steps. And of course, we're very hopeful that, you know, also coming back to the economic reform agenda that we've seen before. I'm quite hopeful and very positive after our, you know, relations and the visits of our foreign ministers of some of the member states. I think we're building up, but of course, you know, it's really that question of how do we come back to the development cooperation? I mean, the humanitarian aid was ongoing, but development cooperation was also ongoing in specific sectors, but how are we coming back to basically normalize this relation? And I think this is where the steps we talked about in terms of accountability are important, but I'm quite optimistic that we're getting there.
How does the EU see the role of another player that was part of this conflict, and that is Eritrea? How do you see the role of Eritrea, and what can the EU do to help improve people-to-people relationships in the region?
The Horn of Africa initiative, funded also by the EU, but World Bank and others as well, started in the 2018 peace agreement between Eritrea and Ethiopia. And I think to me, this is really what I would like to come back to. Regional economic integration, people-to-people contacts across borders between Ethiopia and Eritrea, between Ethiopia and Sudan. This will take time because I think, you know, the question of trust, the question of accountability needs to be solved first. But I think if you look at the region as a larger component, as a region that needs to grow together, that needs to be stronger, I think the region needs to grow in interconnecting itself. To become a region, you need trade relations. You need relationship where basically your people, your societies can travel. Mobility is important. I think this is where the region is engaging further and further. We, as many other countries, you know, we have never stopped talking to Eritrea. But of course, the question is, you know, how much is Eritrea willing to also play a positive and constructive role in the region, but of course also in regards to the accountability question in Ethiopia.
I want to get back to transitional justice. How do you see that? What would that look like in Ethiopia? Could we see a tribunal like we did in Rwanda after the genocide, or a peace and reconciliation, a truth and reconciliation commission like the one we saw in South Africa? And especially given Ethiopia's track record with trying to establish these sort of reconciliation commissions and attempts at reconciliation, how do you see that playing out in the country?
I think it's a very big shift in the Ethiopian history, because as you know, in all the changes in Ethiopia, reconciliation and truth, transitional justice at large was not really the full focus. I think we see a shift in this and the seriousness in this from both sides. But how it's going to look like in specific is something that they try to work out right now with the consultations. Now, the question will be, of course, is the justice part in transitional justice remain? I mean, how big is the justice part in the transitional justice? They are looking into different models from the continent, as you already, you know, referred to Rwanda or South Africa, but they're also looking into models of, you know, Colombia and other places in the world. How is that working somewhere else? How can you bring basically such a big issue into, you know, 120 million country with 120 million people? How can you bring this as part of the national dialogue, as the third step of transitional justice, as they're looking into it right now? But I think this is also where, you know, the clarity needs to come from the Ministry of Justice in terms of how is the criminal investigation, is it going to be an independent body? What kind of mechanisms are they looking at? But I think they're working on this right now in a serious way. But of course, it's going to be a huge effort to bring this kind of transitional justice, truth-telling, reconciliation into the society that is very not used to this, you know, to this format.
Fine. And often these efforts take longer, often than the conflict did itself. Mambi, EU has been playing a wide-ranging role in development, infrastructure and humanitarian areas in Ethiopia. How has the war affected those efforts? And what can you tell the people of Ethiopia they can expect in terms of this kind of support from the European Union?
I mean, we want to come back, you know, to this relation, to this support. As we've talked about it before, we stopped the budget support, but we didn't stop our relations. We continued with development. We continued with people support, but we would like to come back to normalization. I think we would like to come back in terms of having our companies investing, having our relations with the government where we can come back to budget support, where we can come back into a long-term planning. Because, of course, the war has affected everything. I mean, the economy is totally affected by the war. Everything that was supposed to go into investment, into building up an infrastructure, into building up, you know, an industrialization, bringing people from the schools, from the universities into jobs, that has been disrupted massively by the war. This needs to come back. So we do need to see, of course, the reform agenda coming back from the government. And we're willing to come back to this as well. And it really requires movements on the three baskets, especially accountability right now, before we can fully, you know, normalize. But I think we're getting there. It's a gradual approach. But yes, of course, we would like to come back to this normalization. And I think it's something that is doable. It's reachable. But after such a brutal war, it will also take time to, you know, to come back to the trust, to gaining that trust in the region, to gaining that trust, especially with their own population.
Well, that was Heidi Adams talking to Annette Weber, the European Union Special Representative to the Horn of Africa. And that's our show for today. Thank you for watching and listening. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Have a good evening.